Welcome to the Nightly Five podcast with Ben O'Shea.
On today's show, why King Charles is preparing for his own funeral. Plus, the owner of Rebel Sport is expecting to be rocked by a $50 million lawsuit. I'll tell you everything we know. There's been a shake-up at an Australian tech giant, and the first witness has been called in Donald Trump's hush money trial. And I'll leave you today with a grubby NRL tackle and the takeaways from the NFL draft. In our top story today, a worrying development about the health of King Charles.
God save the king!
God save the king!
King Charles has been crowned for less than a year, but Buckingham Palace officials are already said to be making regular updates to his impending funeral plans. The news comes as claims emerge that his health is worse than the public is aware. The 75-year-old, who was crowned at Westminster Abbey in May of last year, was diagnosed with an undisclosed form of cancer in February this year. Since his diagnosis, the once overtly active royal has taken a back seat to focus on his health. The palace has refrained from sharing updates on the monarch's condition. However, royal commentators and political sources have shared that the king was responding well to treatment. Despite the positive claims, aides of King Charles are reportedly reviewing a comprehensive document outlining his funeral arrangements known as Operation Menai Bridge. This meticulously detailed plan, initiated immediately after Queen Elizabeth's burial in 2022, draws from the protocols established during her funeral to ensure smoother formalities for the king. Military officials have confirmed the ongoing updates to Operation Menai Bridge, but stress that it's standard procedure.
Being an outdoor legend feels pretty good.
That BCF and feeling is
BCFing fun. Hey!
That BCF and feeling is not so BCF and fun right now, because the company that owns BCF and Rebel Sport is facing bombshell allegations of an undisclosed relationship involving its chief executive, Anthony Heraghty, and it's at the heart of a potential $50 million lawsuit. Here to tell us more is business reporter Adrian Lowe. Adrian, so who might be bringing this lawsuit?
Ben, at this stage, the details are pretty sketchy because we've had a very interesting incident of the law firm that's representing the aggrieved employees not commenting, not lodging any paperwork yet. This has come from the company preempting what might eventuate. All we know at this stage is that the employees who are making the allegations are head office employees. They're not casual employees down at Rebel Sport. They are in head office in Brisbane.
Yeah, right. So this involves the Super Retail Group that owns Rebel Sport. They own Super Cheap Auto, BCF, that we mentioned. What do we know about the allegations against Anthony Heraghty?
At this stage, the allegations are against the company and against the CEO. So they're about the CEO. It's about an undisclosed relationship, or allegations of an undisclosed relationship, with the former head of human resources. Now, that person is not one of the people who's making the allegations. But their separate allegations also involve allegations of bullying and victimisation, adverse treatment, some corporate team members having unreasonable workloads, insufficient resources and access to information being restricted, and some allegations of unsatisfactory company record management.
Yeah, and even inappropriate company travel. It's a wide-ranging list of grievances here that could potentially form the basis of this lawsuit, which, as you mentioned, has not been lodged as yet. So what is the company saying, and why have they decided to come forward with it?
The company's said not very much, but said a lot at the same time. It's a short statement, but essentially it views the claim as baseless because its board investigated it, appointed external investigators to probe it, and said not one of the allegations could be substantiated. So they are essentially waiting for this lawsuit, if it eventuates, to come through, make the specific allegations so they can actually defend it further.
Yeah, right.
It's quite interesting, as I said earlier, you don't often see it happening this way. Often have the law firms lodge the case, let media know, and then the company has to respond slightly on the back foot. In this case, the company's taken the initiative to alert the market about it, as well as the media, obviously, and they're still waiting. We've tried contacting the law firm. They've not responded.
Yeah,
and we're
right.
Not the only ones.
So the company has had this hanging over their heads. They've alerted the ASX and then basically said to the people with the grievances, these former employees, shit or get off the pot, basically,
yeah,
when it comes to lodging a lawsuit.
Yeah, it's a case of put up or shut up, essentially.
Yeah.
They're really waiting to see what is actually alleged, because until that actually happens, this is not something that is going anywhere.
Yeah, right. And so what's happened to the share price today?
Well, with still a couple of hours of trading, the shares are down about 4%. Super Retail Group is a $3.3 billion company. Mm. So it's not a huge amount of money in terms of their actual market cap, but it is substantial in terms of the legal ramifications. We haven't seen anything of this sort of quantum as a claim or alleged claim that will happen since the case against David Jones by the former publicist. And that was in, you know, late 2009, I believe. So around before the turn of the decade. So we haven't had a huge corporate sort of lawsuit of this magnitude for quite some time.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how it unfolds. And I think anything involving a big company's CEO is going to attract the attention of the market and certainly of the media. Business reporter Adrian Lowe, we really appreciate you giving us this update.
No worries, anytime.
Scott Farquhar, one of the founders of the Australian software giant Atlassian, has stepped down as co-CEO.
The co-founder of one of Australia's tech giants has made a sudden decision to stand down as co-CEO. Atlassian co-CEO and co-founder Scott Farquhar has pulled the pin after 23 years. Farquhar's last day as co-CEO will be August 31 this year. However, he will remain active as a board member and assume a special advisor role. Outspoken co-CEO Mike Cannon-Brookes, the man colloquially known as Double Bay Jesus, will continue to lead as the sole chief executive. The pair started the business in 2001, selling business software online with no salespeople. In a letter Farquhar shared with employees today, he talked about how far the company had come since then, saying rockets don't launch into orbit without Atlassian software. From helping to land the Mars rover to ensuring cars roll off the production line and Domino's pizzas are delivered on time, to life-saving medical procedures being tracked and managed in hospitals, Atlassian solutions are woven into the fabric of teamwork worldwide. Last year, Fortune estimated Farquhar's worth as co-CEO at about $12.5 billion, with his Atlassian growing its market share to nearly $80 billion. After stepping down from the role, Farquhar plans to spend more time with family and improve the world through the philanthropic work of Skip Foundation and Pledge 1%, as well as mentoring other tech chief executives. But attention will now turn to what Cannon-Brookes does now that his are the only hands on the steering wheel. The smart advice is this. Buckle up, folks.
Get to the chopper!
The Terminator himself, Arnold Schwarzenegger, has been unexpectedly dragged into the Donald Trump hush money trial in New York, and it's all thanks to a key witness called by the prosecution, the one-time publisher of the National Enquirer, David Pecker. Pecker told the court overnight that the Hollywood star had a similar catch-and-kill scheme in place to smother negative stories that Mr. Trump is accused of having. Mr. Pecker said Schwarzenegger, who was the governor of California from 2003 to 2011, was the only other politician for who the catch-and-kill scheme was used. Schwarzenegger has yet to comment on the claims. The central allegation in the case is that Trump used catch-and-kill to prevent porn star Stormy Daniels from going public about an alleged affair with him in 2016 when he was running for president, and then falsified business records to conceal it. Pecker's testimony is critical because it helps explain the catch-and-kill scheme to jurors and the intent behind it. Pecker told the court about his involvement in spending $150,000 to buy the rights to a story about an alleged affair from Karen McDougal, a former Playboy model, as well as Daniels. Pecker said the principal purpose of his decision to buy Karen McDougal's story was to benefit Trump's presidential campaign, and he said it was certain that it was either Donald Trump or the Trump Organization who would ultimately reimburse him. Pecker said Trump summoned him to Trump Tower after he was elected president and then thanked him for killing negative stories about him. The trial continues, and you can follow it all on thenightly.com.au.
Oh, that was Milne. Now, Milne's got a record. Milne's got a pass, and he went down low. Joe Chan, first to react. This is going to finish in a nasty fashion. Tane Milne saw a chance to put a shot on down low, and he took it.
Now, in a season of lows for the South Sydney Rabbitohs, there might have been a new one last night against the Storm. Here to tell us more is Nightly Sports editor Ben McClellan. It's a pretty average tackle there. When the game was effectively over.
It was more than over. They were down by about 30 points.
Munster was just standing there. He'd given himself up in the tackle.
Yes.
And then Like that was a dangerous tackle.
Yeah, I mean it's a bit of an unwritten rule, sort of like in the professional basketball where they dribble out the clock. It's a bit of an unwritten rule when the last tackle of an NRL game, you just sort of go through the motions and everyone sort of puts their weapons away.
They're ready to go back to the sheds.
Yeah. And Souths were down, by 34 points. There were three guys on Munster. He was sort of coming to a stop as the siren was about to go, and then Milne, quite deliberately, has then sort of come out of the tackle and then what they call tunnel balled into Munster's knees, taking him out. Storm players took offence to that. Obviously, it was a bit of a scrap. Ridiculously, Mill then got sin binned even though the game was over. So, and now he's copped a 2-game ban. So this sort of moment of madness very much typifies the frustrations at South at the moment. Jason Demetriou was sort of almost lost for words in the post-match press conference, simply labelling it as dumb. So yet again, South are going to have to rejig their lineup because they've lost one of their wingers, to this incredibly stupid decision that he's made. And he has a lot of form in this area, as you heard on the audio then. So yeah, it's just a classic rugby league player
brain explosion.
The only way I could put it. And marred what was a pretty sensational performance from the Storm, who were, again looking like premiership contenders. And also the Roosters played themselves back into contention yesterday very quickly with a massive win over the Dragons. So there's obviously a bit going on in the NRL.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk AFL, that other footy code.
Yep.
Carlton are the hottest ticket in town. A huge come from behind victory to topple the Giants.
Yeah, the Blues, the hottest ticket in town last week with that comeback from behind win over the Giants. They got another blockbuster, a Victorian blockbuster this week against the Cats. That highlights an interesting round in the AFL.
Yeah, it's definitely the young Bulls against the old Bulls. So Carlton are the up-and-comers. They've got some pretty established veterans, but, in terms of a young team challenging for the throne, Geelong have very much been at the pinnacle, the top of the mountain many times. They're having a great season, even though their average age is about 55. So it should be a fantastic game. There was this great game yesterday, Collingwood and Essendon, the Anzac Day draw, but this game on Saturday is definitely looking like potentially being the match of the round.
What happens if it ends in a draw? Because we're all talking about that today.
If it ends in a draw, it's a draw. The AFL appears not to be budging on this. So I guess most listeners would be aware that in the AFL, there is no extra time. There is no golden point. It's pretty much the only sport that comes to mind to me in this 3 seconds that sort of still does this. Every other sport has brought extra time.
What about soccer? You still have draws in soccer.
You can have draws in soccer unless it's a final.
Yeah, unless it's a final.
In the AFL, I do, the grand final will no longer be a draw. After there was a draw between Collingwood and St Kilda more than 10 years ago. But yeah, regular season matches finish in draws, which is what happened yesterday. Traditionalists and purists will say, well, that's a good result because both teams, finished even. Most fans will tell you, and coaches have been talking about it overnight, that, they would like to see a result. Michael Voss, the Carlton coach, who was, interviewed today about his team's match on the weekend, said, if that's what the AFL wants to do, so be it. But obviously he said, as all good coaches, that it would create further strain on players because, God forbid they might have to play an extra 5 minutes of football. how it would work, with AFL it couldn't be golden point. It could be golden goal, but, you probably have to set 5 or 10 minutes so both teams had a good go at it.
Yeah, well, I say everyone knows the rules. Yes. If you want a result, well, then play better, win the bloody game.
Wise words. Kyle Langford probably should have listened to that when he sprayed a pretty easy kick from 30 metres out for the Bombers.
Exactly, like 13 behinds for
kick
both teams. Just like kick them straight.
Yes.
With the first pick in the 2024 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears select Caleb Williams, quarterback, Southern California.
And now the other big news in the sports world today is the NFL draft.
I'm not going to say anything. This is all you.
People that don't follow this very closely might not realise that more people tune in to watch college football players get selected by NFL teams than watch the NBA final series. Like that
totally
tells you everything you need to know.
Me, but sure.
So the NFL draft was held in Detroit for the first time today. 275,000 people rocked up to watch it live.
Whoa, that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of cars. And tens of millions tuned in on TV around the world, especially in America, to watch Caleb Williams, the USC quarterback, superstar, and the best quarterback in college football, be selected with the number one overall pick by the Chicago Bears, who just jettisoned their previous quarterback, who was only drafted a couple of years ago, Justin Fields. He's gone out the door. A couple of interesting things that I'll run through for you. It set a record for the most number of offensive players taken at the start of the draft, 14 in a row. Never happened before. The most before that was 7 before a defensive player was selected. It just goes to show which direction the NFL is moving. Offense sells tickets. The owners of these billion-dollar franchises want to sell tickets. Points. They want to see points. And this was a year where a lot of quarterbacks were selected. 6 in the first 12. And the biggest shock of those was Michael Penix, selected at number 8 by the Atlanta Falcons. No one really expected him to be a top 10 pick. He's battled injuries, had his worst game of his career when the lights were the brightest in the college football final. So some few question marks about him, but it's fascinating as always because, you know, this is the optimism season. Teams go into the offseason thinking that they're going to...
Brady could be back.
Yeah, Brady could be back.
I'm pretty sure it's still going right now.
You know,
Isn't the draft still going?
I've got some Tom Brady news for you.
Oh, of course you do.
So he's getting the celebrity roast treatment.
Very good.
It's going to be on Netflix in May.
Yep.
Sporting stars, celebrities are going to come together, hosted by comedian Kevin Hart.
You'd be hosting it.
Yeah. I wish. And the trailer for it is hilarious. Yeah. It's Tom Brady basically, you know, just walking with sort of exciting music in the background saying, I'm unroastable. And he might just be. How do you knock a bloke?
His ex-wife might have a few things to say. So maybe she'll be a surprise guest.
Oh, my gosh. If they got Giselle, that would be an absolute blockbuster. Yes. And thanks, as always, sports editor of The Nightly, Ben McClellan. And that, folks, is today's show. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and join me tomorrow on The Nightly Five.
The Nightly Five podcast is brought to you by 7 West Media. For all these stories and more, head to thenightly.com.au, helping you get in front of tomorrow.